This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
They're an arrogant, ingrown, close-knit brotherhood like the Mafia. They're the product of a sick society. To hell with tomorrow. Their bag is today. Their bag is right now.
Welcome to Ben and Woods.
Oh, the hair on my neck just straight up.
With Ben Higgins.
Thank God all these bottles I popped. All this paper I've been getting. All these models I popped.
Stephen Woods.
It's my job to pull that demon out of Ben Higgins, and I will do it.
And Paul Reindel.
Oh, my God.
It's Ben and Woods.
Oh, I do. We feed the wrong thing, too.
On 97.3, The Fan.
Yeah, you got
all right, we're halfway home on a Thursday. Ben and Woods, 97.3, The Fan. Great to be here with you. What a morning. I mean, the breaking news of O.J. Simpson passing away at 76 years old. We have been talking about it off the air, too. Just an insane, insane time for everybody. You know, our age, Ben, maybe a little older. It is just, and it hasn't gone away. I mean, it was 30 years ago, right around the NBA Finals that it happened, and it just never went away. It's always stayed kind of right on the surface in our culture, and it's talked about all the time. So he is gone, and hopefully, you know, the Goldman families, the Brown families can get a little bit of peace, a little bit of solace knowing he's not around anymore.
He's not walking around.
He's not walking around free man, yeah. You know, betting on football games, hanging out at Hooters and whatnot, having a ball. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. What did you tease here? Are we going to do the Paulie story? Because it's really good.
Let's start, since we like to get a little bit more...
A little reset?
Reset-y here. Paulie just told us a story a couple of breaks ago about a moral, ethical...
Dilemma
yeah. That he was confronted with yesterday.
This is really good.
Yeah, let me send myself something so that I can help out visually with our YouTube audience. Okay. But basically, I purchased... a photo frame, a custom photo frame, okay, on Etsy, okay, for our house. And I received it yesterday. And it looked amazing.
Looked great. Just what you ordered.
Exactly what I ordered.
Okay.
But when I went to the mailbox to retrieve the delivery, there were two packages in the mailbox wrapped in the exact same way. And I go, okay, these are clearly both from the same sender.
Same guy.
But I only ordered one thing. So I opened up the other one. It was addressed to me, had my name, address, everything.
Sure.
And it was very much not for me. And it was another photo frame that says, I will always be your little girl. Love, Dana. May 18th, 2024. Now, I would assume that means somebody named Dana is getting married on May 18th, 2024. Maybe it's a gift for her father. It's beautiful.
Gorgeous.
But it's not mine.
Read it again, what it says.
I will always be your little girl. Love, Dana.
Okay.
May 18th,
all right, so
2024.
What's the dilemma here?
Well, so I messaged the guy back on Etsy that made it, and I said, hey, I got the item that I ordered. It looks fantastic. Thank you so much. Also, I received another package, and I sent him a picture of it. I go, this clearly was not for me. You printed off two shipping labels, and they were both mine, I guess. And I got both packages, just letting you know. And he responded, I have not actually written him back. He wrote late last night, something along the lines of, and I can pull up his response, but he said, would it be an inconvenience if I sent you a shipping label and had you run to the UPS store and send it back?
Send it back to him, or to...
I'm pulling up his message.
Or to the person.
He says, Paul, thank you for letting me know. Would it be too much of an imposition if I sent you the label, if you could attach it and remail it?
Okay.
It seems silly for me to have it resent back to me so I can in turn mail it back to the other customer, but I don't want to put you out if it's too much to ask. Please let me know. And I go, look, it's not that inconvenient.
You send me a label. I'll run it down to UPS. They'll have the label.
But am I the a-hole? Like, he's the one that screwed up.
Correct.
Obviously. He should just make another frame and send it to the correct person, is what...
He should. But I think you should do it. I do. I think I would do it. I think Ben would do it. I think you should do it. It's going to be a 10-minute imposition.
I think you should give it to Megan for Christmas. Just saying.
I'll always be your little girl.
I got you this. Enjoy. One picture of you, one picture of Megan, put it up on your wall. I think it would be delightful.
Your little, two pictures of him.
Yeah.
I will always be, one when he was young and one now that he's old. I will always be your little girl, love Dana, and then just scratch out Dana and write Paul in Sharpie, May 18th, 2024. Holy crap, dude. Yeah, small business owner, Paulie.
I have never said I wasn't going to do it.
No, you didn't.
People are like, oh, you know, Matthew says rare L.
No, you didn't. Yeah, you didn't say he was going to do it.
I just said, like, am I the a-hole if I felt like, you know what, dude, I don't want to go to the, I don't want to run an errand for you now.
Yeah, it sucks. But I do feel
is the, he the a-hole, I mean, for asking
it,
me
I
to
mean,
do
it
no.
is inconvenient. It's unless inconvenient. You work at the UPS store, this is definitely an inconvenience.
Yeah.
Is that something, if you were him, that you would have asked the person to do, or would you have been like, you know what, it takes 10 minutes, I'm going to make a new one, I'm just going to send it off. Hey, if you want it, have it, otherwise throw it away. Because that's what I would have done. I would have said, I'm so sorry, thanks for letting me know, I'm going to take care of this, I'm going to make a new one and send it to the right person.
I
would feel uncomfortable asking somebody to like run an errand for me.
Etsy's a weird place, man.
Remember
when I ordered the gold records for us and the guy just printed them out on his computer and cost me a fortune and then was like, sorry.
But this is an actual
this is
quality
an actual
item.
Quality
it
item.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. I think you do it. And I think anytime you can.
We could add it to our studio decorations.
We could.
Just put it up.
I'll always be your little girl. Picture me, picture you next to us. I think anytime you can fill up the Karma Cup, Paulie, especially, you know, going to a series against the Dodgers, I'll be helping little old ladies across the street the next couple of days. I mean, anytime you can fill the old Karma Cup, there's a UPS store, I think, fairly close to here, if I'm not mistaken. If not, there's one right by my house. I'll do it. Give it to me. I'll do it. It's literally on my way home.
I see most of the people in the chat say just do it, but Butcher Anthony says I would have already used it as firewood.
He's going to make a roast
it's
over
done.
It. I think you do it, man. I think you do it.
I mean, part of the cost of doing any business, even if you're a small business person, is there's some just loss and error that goes along with shipping, and you just have to eat that sometimes. You can't expect your customers to correct
your
all
mistakes.
Of your mistakes. You make some, and you move on, and that's part of the business model right there.
It did make me laugh when I opened it.
That's funny, man.
What am I supposed to do with this?
I love it. I will always be your little girl.
Do we have any tier ones who happen to be Dana's who are getting married on May 18th, 2024?
Now, that would be a trip.
That's third caller right now.
You win. That would be a trip. That would be a trip indeed. But I think you do it, Paulie. Fill up the Karma Cup. It's going to take you 10 minutes. You know, take you 10 minutes to do it. And really, really good. Really, really good karma.
All right. Now, you also wanted to bring up one more point about the Padres' win over the Cubs yesterday, 10-2. A game that I'm sure it was frustrating for the Cubs. Just like Tuesday's game was frustrating for Padres and Padres fans after the come-from-behind win to do nothing. Sure, the Cubs felt like, okay, we got some momentum going into the series finale, and to get, you know, bodied 10-2 was a bit frustrating for the Cubbies in that game yesterday at Petco Park. So what did you notice there, Paulie, at the end of the game?
I was pretty hot in the bottom of the seventh inning. Palencia was pitching for the Cubs, and he had just gotten shelled in the bottom of the sixth inning. And it appeared to me that he might have been throwing high and in on Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would say he was for sure trying to hit him, but boy, he got to 3-0 really quickly, and all three of them were inside, and Tatis hitting the ground. I don't like seeing Fernando Tatis. I'm sick and tired. It's happened his entire career.
He gets dusted all the time.
So maybe I'm a little bit on edge when I see that happen again, but I don't like it. And I was curious if you guys thought he was being thrown out.
I did, and I always do. And I think the way that you get him out is you have to go. You know, the other night, the home run, he said, a lot of guys try to move me off the plate, and they want to move my feet. But I also knew, as soon as he went up and into me, or in, at least, I knew he was going to throw that slider. I sat on that slider. I pummeled it. We win the ball game. You have to be able to pitch inside. He gets dusted a lot, though. For a superstar player, he gets dusted a ton. And I asked Mike Schilt that very question when we hung out with him in spring training. I asked him, hey, man, have you noticed this? And he said that he had.
And I don't disagree with you. It seems like Tatis may get more inside pitches than most. But he also reacts more than most when they're inside. Do we just notice it more because he's jumping out of the way when Manny gets one inside and he just doesn't move at all? Do we not care as much because he doesn't look like he's reacting to it?
I'm glad you brought that up because Mudd said it yesterday. Watch those hands. I mean, how many? That's the one. Like, if you throw it, Tatis, you hit him in the hip, he's going to be fine. You throw it, Tatis, you hit him in the back, he's going to be fine. You throw it, Tatis, you're going to hit him in the hands, he could be out for 2 months. The hands is really what always concerns me. So you see him drop the bat, back up. Is it dramatic? No, I think it's self-preservation. I mean, that guy was throwing Ched yesterday. I'm fine with his reactions because it lets him avoid getting drilled all the time. If he didn't react the way that he did, I think he'd wear a lot more pitches. He's really athletic, obviously. But I said it to the skipper. I said, it just feels like people come to Petco Park and they just get really, really comfortable at Petco Park. Our superstar's got dirt on his back after damn near every series. He said, oh, yeah, I've noticed it, too. And, you know, kind of left it at that. I mean, what better opportunity? And again, I'm not advocating for anybody to even get hit. I'm not even advocating to end somebody's year. But you got to let them know, too, hey, man, I've got this kid's back. And 10-2, what better time? Did De Los Santos go in? He went in a little bit.
I didn't see anything that made me go, there we go. That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
I feel like Mike Schilt may play the long game on some of these as well.
Yeah.
He stores everything in his memory, and I'm guessing that he'll have that in his memory banks. Padres will go to Wrigley Field later in the season and have another opportunity to face the Cubs, and it may be remembered at some point.
It's not just me. The great Mark Grant just kills me every time. We got that same pitch. I love that. And I'm wondering now, Mudd, can you continue to say we've got that same pitch when we actually don't ever throw that same pitch? That's the one I'm curious about. I can't remember the last time. Now, we hit Wilson Contreras. We hit him in the hands. I mean, clearly not intentional in that situation. And again, that's always the hard part. You got to figure out, is he just pitching inside, or is he actually trying to dot our superstar?
Until that particular at bat yesterday, and while there's been inside pitches and hit batsmen, doesn't feel like other teams have been playing around too much with the Padres. And I don't know if there is a thought that, you know, Mike Schilt's the manager, let's not mess with them as much.
I'm not saying it happens every week, but it happens a few times a year.
It does.
It happened a lot the last couple of years.
Yeah. Man, I would get really mad about it. Like, somebody needs to let this kid know, don't worry, man, we got your back. Like, they need to also not be comfortable digging in. That's all I'm saying. Again, not calling for anybody to get hit in the face, not calling for anybody to even get hit in the hip.
But I will say that through five series that the Padres have played, I don't feel like they haven't obviously won all the games. They're not dominating, but I don't think anybody, Dodgers, Giants, Cardinals, or Cubs, pushed the Padres around in any of those series.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, the worst loss, I mean, what would you say is the worst loss of the season so far?
The worst?
The one Tuesday of just losing 5-1 after the win of 9-8 was the most frustrating.
That was the toughest one to stomach.
They had Joe had that really bad start. They lost 8-3 to the Giants, but for the most part,
last week was
painful. But in terms of, like, the Padres have been in pretty much every game this season, I would say.
Yeah.
It's not as though they have been just bodied and like they're out of games. They have competed well through the first 15 games.
I would agree with that. I would agree. They have competed well, but there was no better time to let, you know, Craig Counsell and his crew know up 10-2 or whatever yesterday that that doesn't fly under the new regime. And like you said, maybe he's playing the long game. But yeah. I'm definitely going to ask him about it tomorrow.
It had all the symptoms of a guy
that's pissed off and wanting to send a message.
They were shelled. He got shelled. They were way out of it.
Yep.
You know, it's not like there were runners on and it was a one-run ball game. Clearly, he's not trying to hit somebody in that position. And that, what happened yesterday,
that
I'm like,
felt,
yeah, if you're going to hit somebody, that's the time to do it.
And that's the guy to do it to if you're them. You know, so it's, look, baseball polices itself. I've always enjoyed that about the game. Schilt's not,
you're in San Diego, apparently.
Schilt's,
we haven't seen it.
Schilt's not going to say anything about it. I promise you.
I can't.
But I will ask him the question tomorrow. That's what we get paid to do.
Right. Fryer Friday, 9 a.m. You can count on Mike Schilt as the Padres get ready to face the Dodgers tomorrow. You can count on some smart baseball from Eno Saris. That is coming up in just a couple of minutes. Let's also give away some more Legion tickets when we come back as well. Don't go anywhere. More Ben and Woods on the way after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Good news for the golf fans. Masters is underway after a night of rain and a delay of 2.5 hours this morning. First couple of groupings are on the course at Augusta National. One of the early leaders at 1 under par. Former champion, the one that I always forget, Danny Willett.
Never heard of him.
Won it not that long ago, actually. Was a very odd champion, but gets that lifetime invitation to come back, and he is now 1 under and tied for the lead very, very, very early in the Masters. The big name still won't tee off for a couple of hours because of the delay, and many of them won't finish their first round today. It'll be dark, and they'll have to come back tomorrow morning and finish the first round on a Friday, but it is underway. First golf major of the year at Augusta National Golf Club.
Here we go.
But I'm not watching. There's no one that interesting on the course yet. But I just checked it during the break just to see what was going on.
Keep the people updated.
Yeah. Still, would bucket list item. Would like to go someday.
We know.
To Augusta National.
Yeah.
Let's see. We're going to give away some Legion tickets here in a couple of minutes. They're going on a four-game winning streak. They're going for a fifth win in a row on Sunday at Snapdragon Stadium at 1 o'clock. I'll give away a couple of tickets here before the bottom of the hour. Eno Saris is coming up in just a few minutes as well. We'll have our Smart Baseball segment momentarily here on 97.3 The Fan.
Yeah, he's been pretty vocal about the pitching injuries we talked about yesterday, too. Eno's a very, very smart guy. Anyway, there's experts weighing in. There's non-experts weighing in. The general consensus is nobody knows anything. As usual, no one really knows anything. And there are, you know, things that you can do, certainly, to...
I will say, I haven't seen anybody outside of the Players Association really leaning into the pitch clock as the reason.
Yeah, and I mean, look, that's the thing, is you look at that and you go, well, who better? Who would better know than that? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
What's wrong with baseball? You ask the players. But, you know, it has to have some merit. If players are going, yes, this has been a problem. Is that fair to say?
Well, I don't deny the fact that forcing pitchers to throw more often, quicker, could cause more fatigue, and fatigue can contribute to injuries. But I saw someone made the same point on Twitter that I did yesterday. Let's just give pitchers a full, 5 minutes between pitches so they can totally recover every time they throw. There has to be some sort of limit. Even though we didn't have a pitch clock before, there has to be a reasonable limit on pitchers throwing between pitches.
Yeah.
Or the game, do we all agree that the game is better with the pitch clock than it was before?
Yeah,
the pitch clock?
We do. I mean, we do. We mm-hmm. absolutely agree that it's better. But we're also not the ones that have to execute that. You know what I will say? When the umpire is coming out and there's a violation, like, that slows the game down too. And it happens probably more than it should, honestly, in the game of baseball right now. The engagement with the hitter, it's a little bit odd, and they're still trying to feel their way around it. That's not aesthetically great either, you know, and pitch, assessing somebody a ball or, you know, whatever. That's not really in the spirit of it either. But if the pitchers themselves are saying, yeah, we really don't enjoy this, and especially, and you can't keep subtracting time from it every year. Also, like, they wore it last year, they changed it a little bit this year. So find something that's worked and leave it.
Go back 5 years ago and tell me a 10-2 game at Petco Park,
probably 4.5 hours long.
Right.
Yeah.
Yesterday, 2 hours, 30 minutes.
That's shocking, man.
2 hours, shocking. 30 minutes That's for shocking. A 10-2 game.
That's shocking. It is. It really is.
It's a better version
product.
Of baseball. It's
it
a
really
better
is.
Product.
It's a better product. Period, the end. It really, really is a better product. And I'm not arguing with that at all. And I do think changing rules year after year, you know, that really only benefit, I think, what the pitchers are saying. It's you're benefiting the offense here, and I think that's what they're saying. They want to keep it fair.
I mean, if they could come up with stats and said, hey, if they got 17 seconds instead of 15 seconds, we could avoid, 30%
right,
of injuries,
right.
Then yes.
They would do it, I think.
Do that. I just don't think it's going to make a huge difference. They've come up with a time that feels kind of right between pitches to keep the game moving, and until you can show me, oh, yeah, this is absolutely the cause. And I don't think you're ever going to be able to say this is the cause of pitching injuries, because I firmly believe that the real cause of pitching injuries is just throwing too hard now.
This is a good point. Nobody in the chats is it a better product when star pitchers get hurt, though? The answer to that question is obviously not.
Well, no, it's a legitimate concern. I just don't believe the pitch clock is what's
is too
causing
plain.
It. I saw a list of the guys who have averaged over 95 miles an hour for fastballs in the last 3 years. There's about less than you think. There's only about 20, 25 guys who can actually average that high for a fastball. Dylan Cease is one of them. 90% or more of them have had Tommy John surgeries. Some have had two. Some are about to get another one. It just... That's, to me, the biggest thing. The human body cannot stand the kind of torque and pressure that you can get when you throw that hard. And because we now know how to train and get your muscles and everything available to throw that hard, and because it's very valuable for pitchers to do that, they can make a ton of money by doing it, they're going to do it. But we can't have their ligament is just not strong enough to support that.
And right now, let's just use guys we know. Dylan Lesko, Robbie Snelling, right? Highly touted. Are they going to now go, man, this is scary.
Dylan Lesko's already had one.
So, but any young pitcher in any organization, you know what they're not going to do? If they're capable of throwing 98, Ben, in the first inning, they're probably going to do it. The days, like Justin Verlander was talking the other day of, well, yeah, it was different. You know, you see it. You remember watching baseball. Guy would sit 92, 93. Greg Maddux could throw hard. He just didn't. He did when he needed to. Guys, these days, they're not going to leave anything in the tank at all. They're going to go out and they know, hey, man, I got to go. They're only going to give me 5 innings. I need to show that these guys that I can pitch at this level. I can do that by spinning it really hard and throwing it really hard. And yes, it's detrimental to their health.
At some point, if you've been around long enough, you may have the luxury.
Yes,
of,
yes.
If, you're Kyle Hendricks. I mean, you can't throw that hard anyway. You can have the luxury of plotting your game plan and going, all right, I can back off a little bit here, yeah. Save some more.
Yu Darvish does
but
it.
When, yeah, Yu Darvish
when
can
Yu Darvish,
do that.
He'll, all of a sudden, you'll be watching the game in the sixth, and he'll go, 97, and you're like, what in the world?
But when you're a guy who's one bad start away from being sent back down to double A.
Bringing it.
You're not.
You're spinning you're it,
not,
you're bringing it.
You're not plotting, I'll go 85% for the first couple of innings, and then I can ramp it up a little bit. No, you're 100% from pitch one until they take you out, because you don't want that one pitch that you backed off to be the one that you surrendered.
Pound.
The two-run homer that all of a sudden your career is now on a different trajectory completely.
I'm trying to think. I don't know that I've ever thrown a pitch at max velocity. I really don't. Like, I don't know in all the leagues I've played in my whole life, I don't know that I've ever, you know why I didn't? Because I couldn't control it. I didn't know where it was going. You know, so the Max Velo thing, those guys are the guys that turn into elite pitchers that can throw with Max Velo and control where it's going. And I see that all the time. Well, nobody pitches anymore. They're just throwers. That's garbage. BS. They wouldn't be in the big leagues. There's guys with control problems, but they're not up there doing crow hops from the rubber, throwing it as hard as they can. They've learned how to harness it, and those ones that can really harness it, they're the ones that make the big money. They're the ones that are going to be around for a while.
All right, let's give away those Legion tickets. If you want to go to Sunday's game, 833-288-0973. Third caller wins, and if you want to get your own tickets, you can go to SDLegion.com for the game against the NOLA Gold this Sunday at 1 o'clock at Snapdragon Stadium. Eno Saris, that'll be one of the topics with Eno. Pitching injuries and more. Smart Baseball is coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Yeah, pitching injuries, this topic is not going away.
No.
Because like the best topics, hard to come up with a real answer for it. But
yeah.
Everyone's got an opinion. Eno Saris certainly does. We're going to have our Smart Baseball segment coming up right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Yeah, you know, kind of stepping into the hornet's nest. I know you've had these discussions before, but Woods and I were just talking about the pitching injuries and the pitch clock and the velocity aspect of it all. First of all, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Are they blaming you yet for winning?
Well, no,
yeah, I saw.
First of all, are there more pitching injuries, or are we just noticing it because of the names that just happened to have a little cluster here in the last week? Are there more than we used to get?
I mean, there are generally more, but this year there's no more than the recent usual. And there's two reasons that we are noticing. One is it's Spencer Strider and Shane Bieber and Garrett Cole. That's a big deal. The other reason is it happens every April. And what my theory is on the April spike, the reason why this is, I could set an alarm for next year to write another piece about pitching injuries, is that every April we get a big spike. And that's because I think the players are actually still hurt. Like, they're hurt from the off season. What happens with the off season is, you know, you're like, oh, well, I'll just sit on it. I'll just take a step back for 2 weeks. And, you know, I'm not throwing in games. I'm not throwing in like high intensity environments. And so, then you get to spring and you're like, okay, it's ramping up. You're feeling good. And then you pitch your first couple of games and you're like, no, this actually hurts.
Yeah.
And so that's why every April we get a spike and then it goes down. And then we get another little spike in sort of August, September, which is, I think, fatigue related or, you know, seasonal sort of stuff. So, those are the two reasons why we're talking about it right now.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because I have no problem with somebody wanting to spin the ball more. I have no problem with somebody wanting to show off their maximum velocity. It's how guys get paid these days, you know. And I mentioned a couple days ago, when you watch how teams treat pitchers, hey, come on up. You know, you got options. We're going to throw you for 3 innings, and then we won't see you for a while. And then we're going to call up this other guy, and then we're going to send him down. And, you know, the way that we all of our favorite teams manipulate their arms is a dirty kind of business, right? It's a strategy, but it's also a dirty business. I understand guys wanting to make their mark. I understand guys wanting to get long-term contracts because, you know, they want to be able to brush their hair one day, and some of them can't after their baseball careers are over. They've been cut open so many times. So I get why they do that. I get why they're trying to throw hard.
Yeah, I mean, you can't tell a player to pitch softer. You can't take over a team as a GM and say, we're all going to pitch, you know, a little bit less hard. Like, we're all going to take a mile off, you know. Like, that's just not how people work. In fact, my kid is 11 years old and in Little League, and I can't tell him not to throw as hard as he can. Like, when he gets on the mound, he wants to throw as hard as he can. There's something like you get on the mound, you just want to make the ball move. And you want to throw as hard as you can. So, I think it's sort of, you know, it's ingrained in the game. As for the other part, you know, if we could predict injuries well, you know, maybe you would start to see different packages in terms of who would pay for different players, different pitchers in different ways. But like Jordan Montgomery hasn't been injured, but he got, you know, less than Blake Snell, who has. You know, so, and they both got short deals. So, you know, the science of predicting injury isn't good. And so therefore, if you think no matter what I pay a pitcher, it's a 50-50 shot he's hurt this year, what you end up doing is what the Rays do, or even the Padres this year, what you do is you try to build up as much cheap depth as you can. And you have your Randy Vasquez and your Johnny Britos. You have these guys who are behind the guys who are paid more. And then, yes, when the big guy gets hurt, you bring in the guy who's on the mid-league minimum. Yeah. And that's the dirty part of it. But that's also why it's probably not going to change that much.
You know, I know what a lot of baseball fans think when they see these pitchers. And they go, well, a lot of pitchers throw softer and are effective. Hey, location, good off-speed stuff. And that is all very true. But by the numbers, you know, the difference between 94 and 96, 96 and 98, how much more effective are those, just those last 1 or 2 miles per hour for pitchers? Because I think people would be surprised at what a huge difference that last tick does make on the major league level.
Yeah, I mean, batters train for a certain, the biggest portion of what they see. And right now, the league average velocity is 93.5, 93.7, somewhere in there, right around 94. And so basically they train the number they see the most off is 93 and 94. So they're easy. They're ready to hit 93, 94. Once you start adding a tick off of that, what you start to see is home runs per fastball just decline. And like by 96, you're declining by the home run rate is almost like, you know, two-thirds of what it was at 94. And then when you get to 98, it's half. So you're losing a lot of home runs when you're able to throw that hard, and you're doubling your swinging strikes. So all the bad things kind of start to go away, and the good things come. And one of the reasons why, yes, there are guys every year, Tyler Anderson, Kyle Gibson, there are these types that, like, you know, strike out 18 to 20. That's, you know, the league strikeout is 22%. There's people who don't strike out as many guys. They throw softer and they have good years. What they don't do is have good year after good year after good year.
Yeah.
What you'll see is they usually have, like, just look at Kyle Hendricks right now on the Cubs. He is struggling mightily. And part of the reason is he sits like 89. And so you basically have to be perfect with your locations, and that's what we discovered. It is very hard to be perfect with your locations every year and year to year.
Well,
and that's why you end up having these sort of ups and downs with the low velo guys.
And hitters are also training for bat speed. They're training for elevation. They're training to take your mistakes and hit them out of the ballpark. And, you know, that's always one of my most fascinating things about baseball. The pitching gets really good, then the offense catches up. Then, you know, and mm-hmm. they're always kind of chasing each other. What did you make of Gerrit Cole's comments about, you know, he's kind of bummed that Major League Baseball, you know, would say it doesn't matter. How much stock do you put into the pitch clock? Because, like I just said before you came on, you know, anytime you want to know something about an industry, ask the people that play it, you know. And I know that there are guys that have had beef with the pitch clock. What do you make of that beef?
Yeah, it's that's a really interesting thing, because in the process of researching my sort of explainer data and research explainer about what's going on, I discovered a tweet by Anthony Kastrovitz, who said that minor league numbers, minor league injuries are up, and I hadn't ever seen minor league pitch numbers, minor league injury numbers, because I don't have access to those. So that's like somebody from MLB gave them to them,
yeah,
and thought that they made them look good. I don't think it looks good. So, for example, in 2018, they implemented the pitch clock in the minor leagues. I'll have to say this first. In the major leagues, there has not been a TJ strike, TJ like increase since, or injury increase since they put the pitch clock in. That's at the major league level. But here at the minor league level, they've had it longer. In 2018, when they instituted the clock, or 2017, the year before they instituted the clock in the minor leagues, they had 152 TJs in the minor leagues. In the last 3 years, 278, 205, 219. I mean, that's an order of magnitude higher. And it's like year to year, it's above 200 now. So to me, that's a little bit of an alarm bell. It's like, wow, in the minor leagues where you've had it longer, you have had an injury spike. What's up with that? And then I talked to, you know, my friends who model fatigue for a living. You know, one of them works for the Cubs now, Dr. Mike Son. He's written on The Athletic about this. Or just think about this without asking the experts. If I ask you to do the same amount of heavy lifting, like power lifting, if I ask you the same amount of sprinting, if I ask you the same amount of just jogging, but in less time, you're going to be more tired.
Yes.
It's like a fact of life.
Interesting.
I would have said that as morning radio hosts, we model fatigue for a living as well. But
no one models it better.
If you model underwear, you know, we model fatigue. Yeah. The literal poster children of fatigue.
You know, Sarah from The Athletic is with us. Now, one of the guys who throws really hard and threw even a little bit harder yesterday is Dylan Cease. In fact, I saw 100 on the gun. I think that was the miracle of rounding.
Yeah, 99.
I think it was 99.6, but that's where rounding really, really benefits you when you get the triple digits out of it. But he also threw a pitch at 63 yesterday. Now, you talked to Dylan Cease about that pitch and others. What did you get from your conversation with Dylan?
It was pretty funny because he was busy and I couldn't have a full interview with him, but we know each other. And so I was like, oh, you don't have to have, that's cool. I just wanted to say one thing. 65?
Crazy.
It was a mile per hour on that pitch. And he's like, he was just laughing. He said, yeah, it's a troll pitch. It's a palate cleanser. It's basically an ephus. And he said, yeah. So basically, he just said that, like, he's trying to throw it slow. He does all his regular body motions, but without the same amount of power. And he's actually aiming for in front of the plate. And he's trying to throw, like, a big curvy pitch at them just so that the next 97-mile-an-hour pitch mm-hmm. just seems like it just exploded out of nowhere. You know, it seems like it's 120, you know. And it's, you know, what you'll see is batters will almost never swing at it because they can see it coming a mile away. And it's just meant to just, you know, like you said, palate cleanser, just sort of change what's happening in the at-bat so they can't get just used to 97, 97, 97. Okay, you know, I'm ready, I'm ready, I'm ready. Oh, what was that?
Crazy. I mean, he's so fun to watch pitch too, and it's like I said, it's a rarity. I mean, Blake Snell could hump it up there. You know, he could get it up 96, 97, but you know, Dylan, watching him go out there and touch 99, it felt different watching that because he has a Padres uniform on. We hadn't seen that really in a while, and he's incredible to watch.
Yeah, I mean, in the context of injury, what you really want to see is if he's able to hit 100, you want to see him sit lower than 97. And because what we've seen over the history is that, yes, pitchers are throwing closer to their maximum. That's part of the injury question. And across baseball, the average is 3.2 right now. It's the difference between your sitting and your max. And I just think, I think the best mantra for somebody coming up is like, have 97, sit 93.
Yeah.
You know? And try to, like, if we could try to, like, get that across to people that, like, you know, save that maximum for a couple pitches a game. Save that for a strike two fastball, you know, an 0-2 fastball or something. Save that for a big moment. That might help. But again, you're going to tell people save bullets when they feel like every pitch they throw in the major leagues could be their last.
All right, you know, just your opinion. Jackson Merrill, Jackson Holiday, Jackson Chourian.
Better answer correctly.
Which one are you gambling on in the long term?
Oh man, you know what's funny is that the three youngest players in Major League Baseball are all named Jackson.
Yeah. That's it.
I think Jackson Merrill is like sort of underrated in the group because Holiday gets all the burn. I think we'll be talking about all these guys for a while. The one interesting thing is that Jackson Chourian, you know, they're all young, and Chourian's a little bit younger than Merrill. But Jackson Chourian was supposed to make contact. He's having a little bit of a harder time making contact than Merrill. So just based on that little bit, we could see, you know, Merrill end up being the second best Jackson. Whereas most people think it's sort of Holiday, Chourian, Merrill. So I'm not going to bet against Holiday until I see it a little bit more. I mean, we saw one game.
Just to add to this discussion a little bit, because I talked with my 20-year-old who was named Jack. But I also kind of wanted to name him Jackson, and Shelly just like just Jack without the son. Apparently, 20 years ago, that was just a very good sounding name for a lot of parents who were having babies.
Jackson,
20 years ago. So, yeah, that's there's probably a lot of them out there at this point. But weird that three of them are all hitting the major leagues right at the same time as 20-year-olds,
and all super fun to watch. I mean, all super talented and seemingly with really good heads on their shoulders. I've been so impressed, you know, with Jackson Merrill and his ABs. I mean, even when he takes an offer, he manages to find, you know, a way to walk. He takes some really good takes. Did see him chase one yesterday. It feels rare when he chases one out of the zone. He's got he's got a great idea of what he's doing up there.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things about what he does compared to even the other two guys is the elite contact rates. You know, with those elite contact rates, and we talked about this, is, you know, when I talked to him, it was just about, you know, making better choices at the plate and then, you know, trying to stay back a little bit so that he doesn't get out in front and just use his hands to kind of slap things around, like kind of stay back so that when he does make contact, it's all connected and he gets the most power he can out of it. So, you know, right now, you know, he's got the one homer, but we saw some in the spring, and like, you know, I think we're going to see, you know, maybe this year only, you know, like 15 homers, but a peak.
Yeah, pitching injuries, this topic is not going away.
No.
Because like the best topics, hard to come up with a real answer for it, but
yeah.
Everyone's got an opinion. You know, Sarah certainly does. We're going to have our Smart Baseball segment coming up right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Yeah, you know, kind of stepping into the hornet's nest. I know you've had these discussions before, but Woods and I were just talking about the pitching injuries and the pitch clock and the velocity aspect of it all. First of all, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Are they blaming you yet for running?
Yeah, well, no,
yeah,
first,
I saw.
First of
I
all,
did.
Are there more pitching injuries, or are we just noticing it because of the names that just happened to have a little cluster here in the last week? Are there more than we used to get?
I mean, there are generally more, but this year there's no more than the recent usual. And there's two reasons that we are noticing. One is it's Spencer Strider and Shane Bieber and Garrett Cole. That's a big deal. The other reason is it happens every April. And what my theory is on the April spike, the reason why this is, I could set an alarm for next year to write another piece about pitching injuries, is that every April we get a big spike. And that's because I think the players are actually still hurt. Like they're hurt from the off season. What happens with the off season is, you know, you're like, oh, well, I'll just sit on it. I'll just take a step back for 2 weeks. And, you know, I'm not throwing in games. I'm not throwing in like high intensity environments. And so, then you get to spring and you're like, okay, it's ramping up. You're feeling good. And then you pitch your first couple of games and you're like, no, this actually hurts.
Yeah.
And so that's why every April we get a spike and then it goes down. And then we get another little spike in sort of August, September, which is, I think, fatigue related or, you know, seasonal sort of stuff. So, yeah, those are the two reasons why we're talking about it right now.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because I have no problem with somebody wanting to spin the ball more. I have no problem with somebody wanting to show off their maximum velocity. It's how guys get paid these days, you know. And I mentioned a couple days ago, when you watch how teams treat pitchers, hey, come on up. You know, you got options. We're going to throw you for three innings, and then we won't see you for a while. And then we're going to call up this other guy, and then we're going to send him down. And, you know, the way that we all of our teams, all of our favorite teams manipulate their arms is a dirty kind of business, right? It's a strategy, but it's also a dirty business. I understand guys wanting to make their mark. I understand guys wanting to get long-term contracts because, you know, they want to be able to brush their hair one day, and some of them can't after their baseball careers are over. They've been cut open so many times. So I get why they do that. I get why they're trying to throw hard.
Yeah, I mean, you can't tell a player to pitch softer. You can't take over a team as a GM and say, we're all going to pitch, you know, a little bit less hard. Like, we're all going to take a mile off, you know, like, that's just not how people work. In fact, my kid is 11 years old and in Little League, and I can't tell him not to throw as hard as he can. Like, when he gets on the mound, he wants to throw as hard as he can. There's something like, you get on the mound, you just want to make the ball move, and you want to throw as hard as you can. So, I think it's sort of, you know, it's ingrained in the game. As for the other part, you know, if we could predict injuries well, you know, maybe you would start to see different packages in terms of who would pay for different players, different pitchers in different ways. But like Jordan Montgomery hasn't been injured, but he got, you know, less than Blake Snell, who has, you know, so, and they both got short deals. So, you know, the science of predicting injury isn't good. And so, therefore, if you think, no matter what I pay a pitcher, it's a 50-50 shot he's hurt this year, what you end up doing is what the Rays do, or even the Padres this year, what you do is you try to build up as much cheap depth as you can, and you have your Randy Vasquez and your Johnny Britos, you have these guys who are behind the guys who are paid more, and then, yes, when the big guy gets hurt, you bring in the guy who's on the mid-league minimum. Yeah. And that's the dirty part of it. But that's also why it's, you know, it's probably not going to change that much.
You know, I know what a lot of baseball fans think when they see these pitchers. And they go, well, a lot of pitchers throw softer and are effective. Hey, location, good off-speed stuff. And that is all very true. But by the numbers, you know, the difference between 94 and 96, 96 and 98, how much more effective are those just those last 1 or 2 miles per hour for pitchers? Because I think people would be surprised at what a huge difference that last tick does make on the major league level.
Yeah, I mean, batters train for a certain, the biggest portion of what they see. And right now, the league average velocity is 93.5, 93.7, somewhere in there, right around 94. And so basically, they train the number they see the most off is 93 and 94. So they're easy. They're ready to hit 93, 94. Once you start adding a tick off of that, what you start to see is home runs per fastball just decline. And like by 96, you're declining by the home run rate is almost like, you know, 2/3 of what it was at 94. And then when you get to 98, it's half. So you're losing a lot of home runs when you're able to throw that hard. And you're doubling your swinging strikes. So all the bad things kind of start to go away and the good things come. And one of the reasons why, yes, there are guys every year, Tyler Anderson, Kyle Gibson, there are these types that, like, you know, strike out 18 to 20. That's, you know, the league strikeout is 22%. There's people who don't strike out as many guys. They throw softer and they have good years. What they don't do is have good year after good year after good year.
Yeah.
What you'll see is they usually have, like, just look at Kyle Hendricks right now on the Cubs. He is struggling mightily. And part of the reason is he sits like 89. And so you basically have to be perfect with your locations. And that's what we discovered. It is very hard to be perfect with your locations every year and year to year.
Well,
and that's, that's why you end up having these sort of ups and downs with the low velo guys.
And hitters are also training for bat speed. They're training for elevation. They're training to take your mistakes and hit them out of the ballpark. And, you know, that's always one of my most fascinating things about baseball. The pitching gets really good, then the offense catches up. Then, you know, and it they're always kind of chasing each other. What did you make of Gerrit Cole's comments about, you know, he's kind of bummed that Major League Baseball, you know, would say it doesn't matter. How much stock do you put into the pitch clock? Because, like I just said before you came on, you know, anytime you want to know something about an industry, ask the people that play it, you know. And I know that there are guys that have had beef with the pitch clock. What do you make of that beef?
Yeah, it's that's a really interesting thing, because in the process of researching my sort of explainer data and research explainer about what's going on, I discovered a tweet by Anthony Castrovince, who said that minor league numbers, minor league injuries are up. And I hadn't ever seen minor league pitch numbers, minor league injury numbers, because I don't have access to those. So that's like somebody from MLB gave them to him,
yeah,
and thought that they made them look good. I don't think it looks good. So, for example, in 2018, they implemented the pitch clock in the minor leagues. I have to say this first. In the major leagues, there has not been a injury increase since they put the pitch clock in. That's at the major league level. But here at the minor league level, they've had it longer. In 2018, when they instituted the clock, or 2017, the year before they instituted the clock in the minor leagues, they had 152 TJs in the minor leagues. In the last 3 years, 278, 205, 219. I mean, that's an order of magnitude higher. And it's like year to year, it's above 200 now. So to me, that's a little bit of an alarm bell. It's like, wow, in the minor leagues where you've had it longer, you have had an injury spike. What's up with that? And then I talked to, you know, my friends who model fatigue for a living. You know, one of them works for the Cubs now, Dr. Mike Son. He's written on The Athletic about this. Or just think about this without asking the experts. If I ask you to do the same amount of heavy lifting, like power lifting, if I ask you the same amount of sprinting, if I ask you the same amount of just jogging, but in less time, you're going to be more tired.
Yes.
It's like a fact of life.
Interesting.
I would have said that as morning radio hosts, we model fatigue for a living as well. But
no one models it better. If you model underwear, you know, we model fatigue. Yeah. The literal poster children of fatigue.
You know, Saras from The Athletic is with us. Now, one of the guys who throws really hard and threw even a little bit harder yesterday is Dylan Cease. In fact, I saw 100 on the gun. I think that was the miracle of rounding.
Yeah, 99.6.
I think it was 99.6, but that's where rounding really benefits you, when you get the triple digits out of it. But he also threw a pitch at 63 yesterday. Now, you talked to Dylan Cease about that pitch and others. What did you get from your conversation with Dylan?
It was pretty funny, because he was busy and I couldn't have a full interview with him, but we know each other. And so I was like, oh, you don't have time? That's cool. I just wanted to say one thing. 65?
Crazy.
It was a mile per hour on that pitch. And he's like, he was just laughing. He said, yeah, it's a troll pitch. It's a palate cleanser. It's basically an ephus. And he said, yeah. So basically, he just said that, like, he's trying to throw it slow. He does all his regular body motions, but without the same amount of power. And he's actually aiming for in front of the plate. And he's trying to throw, like, a big curvy pitch at them, just so that the next 97-mile-an-hour pitch just seems like it just exploded out of nowhere. You know, it seems like it's 120, you know. And it's, you know, what you'll see is batters will almost never swing at it because they can see it coming a mile away. And it's just meant to just, you know, like you said, palate cleanser, just sort of change what's happening in the at-bat, so they can't get just used to 97, 97, 97. Okay, you know, I'm ready, I'm ready, I'm ready. Oh, what was that?
Crazy. I mean, he's so fun to watch pitch too, and it's like I said, it's a rarity. I mean, Blake Snell could hump it up there. You know, he could get it up 96, 97, but you know, Dylan watching him go out there and touch 99, it felt different watching that, because he has a Padres uniform on. We hadn't seen that really in a while. And he's incredible to watch.
Yeah, I mean, in the context of injury, what you really want to see is if he's able to hit 100, you want to see him sit lower than 97. And because what we've seen over the history is that, yes, pitchers are throwing closer to their maximum. That's part of the injury question. And across baseball, the average is 3.2 right now, is the difference between your sitting and your max. And I just think, I think the best mantra for somebody coming up is like, have 97, sit 93.
Yeah.
You know, and try to like, if we could try to like get that across to people that like, you know, save that maximum for a couple pitches a game. Save that for a strike two fastball, you know, an 0-2 fastball or something. Save that for a big moment. That might help. But again, you're going to tell people to save bullets when they feel like every pitch they throw in the major leagues could be their last.
All right. You know, just your opinion. Jackson Merrill, Jackson Holiday, Jackson Churia.
Better answer correctly.
Which one are you gambling on in the long term?
Oh man, you know what's funny is that the three youngest players in Major League Baseball are all named Jackson.
Yeah. That's it.
I think Jackson Merrill is like sort of underrated in the group because Holiday gets all the burn. I think we'll be talking about all these guys for a while. The one interesting thing is that Jackson Churia, you know, they're all young, and Churio's a little bit younger than Merrill, but Jackson Churia was supposed to make contact, and he's having a little bit of a harder time making contact than Merrill. So just based on that little bit, we could see, you know, Merrill end up being the second-best Jackson, whereas most people think it's sort of Holiday, Churio, Merrill. So I'm not going to bet against Holiday until I see a little bit more. I mean, we saw one game.
Just to add to this discussion a little bit, because I talked with my 20-year-old, who was named Jack, but I also kind of wanted to name him Jackson, and Shelley just like, just Jack without the son. Apparently, 20 years ago, that was just a very good-sounding name for a lot of parents who were having babies.
Jackson,
20 years ago. So, yeah, that's there's probably a lot of them out there at this point, but weird that three of them are all hitting the major leagues right at the same time as 20-year-olds.
And all super fun to watch. I mean, all super talented and seemingly with really good heads on their shoulders. I've been so impressed, you know, with Jackson Merrill and his ABs. I mean, even when he takes an offer, he manages to find, you know, a way to walk. He takes some really good takes. Did see him chase one yesterday. It feels rare when he chases one out of the zone. He's got he's got a great idea of what he's doing up there.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things about what he does compared to even the other two guys is the elite contact rates. You know, with those elite contact rates, and we talked about this, is, you know, when I talked to him, it was just about, you know, making better choices at the plate and then, you know, trying to stay back a little bit so that he doesn't get out in front and just use his hands to kind of slap things around, like kind of stay back so that when he does make contact, it's all connected and he gets the most power he can out of it. So, you know, right now, you know, he's got the one homer, but we saw some in the spring, and like, you know, I think we're going to see, you know, maybe this year only, you know, like 15 homers, but a peak Jackson Merrill, I think could hit like 25 homers. We'll have to see what the speed is like, but, you know, like, you know, there's some, like, a little bit of a memory of like Trey Turner with maybe a little bit less speed. Like, yeah, just as an athletic guy, he makes a lot of contact, has more pop than you think.
Well, take small that. Sample size, but one of the problems with having such great bat-to-ball contact skills is you don't walk much because, well, you make contact so often. Tony Gwynn didn't walk that much because, well, he's just so good at making contact. Jackson Merrill has walked 7 times in 49 plate appearances already. That's elite. I mean, his OBP is 100 points higher than his average. If you see that, that's Ricky Henderson type territory. People that do that. I don't know that that's sustainable, but to me, that's a really good sign early. You know, we only got a few seconds left, but I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
No, definitely. I mean, pairing those things is rare. What you normally get is somebody who just swings at everything, makes contact at everything, and they get on base that way. So that's going to be the source of his power going forward. Approach as much as mechanics or filling out.
Eno, appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend and enjoy all the baseball you get to watch.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Eno Saris, brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, our smart baseball segment every single week. Always look forward to our conversation with Eno. Not our last guest for today, though, because Paulie's got something special for us. A little surprise coming up in our next segment. We will be joined by a guy that I have not talked to in many, many years, but I always enjoyed covering him. Former Padre, Major League Baseball, Ryan Klesko is going to check in with the Ben and Woods program when we return to kick off our final hour of the show. Not the day. Roundtable's coming up at 10 o'clock this morning as well. But stick around. Ryan Klesko will join us next with Ben and Woods right here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Don't go away.